Welcome to She's Interesting, a podcast about business, money, and well-being for women over 30. I'm your host, Rochelle Hariri, an award-winning marketer, consultant, and startup advisor. Today, I'm excited to be recording a live podcast in partnership with my great friends at Toast. Today, we are celebrating International Women's Day, International Women's Month, and we are going live here in Toronto with our four incredible panelists. Our panelists are Joanne Cavan, Director of Engineering at Dye & Durham, Janet Lin, who is the Vice President of Payments and Lending at EQ Banking, and Matthew Rivard, Director of Strategy and Product Acceleration at Google, and Amina Tariq, SVP, Product and Client Experience at PurposeMed. As you can see, we are working with a one mic situation, so we're just gonna try to share up here, but I'm gonna kick it off with my first question. Let's just get straight into it, because that's how I like to roll on this podcast. Could you provide us with a success story or instance where mentorship or sponsorship has significantly contributed to your personal advancement or provided a meaningful opportunity for you? Alternatively, have you experienced a situation where you were able to champion someone else, another woman in the industry, that has led that person to having a really successful outcome?
Okay, I guess I'll start. I'm going to give an anecdote for the second question. It was a couple of years ago. The last company I was working for was converting some contractors over to full-time associates. And there was three guys, one woman in that group. And they were all doing very similar work for the company. But when they did the leveling, they leveled the one woman in the group one level down from all the men. And the explanation I got in that discussion was, well, she's very quiet and doesn't say a lot. And I said, well, first of all, look, she's a contractor. And so, of course, he's not saying a whole lot. But also, secondly, I'm not really hiring people for how much they speak, but also for what like they actually do. And she's doing the job, and she should be at the same level as the guys that we're also hiring. And so we actually did give her an offer at the same level for the same money.
There you go.
But one of the people in the panel that was making decisions was also a woman. And she came to me afterwards, and she said, I'm really embarrassed, really kind of ashamed about it. And I said, relax for a bit here. Unpack for a moment that we too are also being conditioned by the world around us, and we're making the same bias mistakes. And so, you know, we have to undo that ourselves. So don't beat yourself up for it, but learn from it and think about it for the future.
That's a beautiful story. Thank you so much for sharing that with this group. I think sometimes we assume that we don't have any internal bias or that we're not affected by what we've been taught in society, but the reality is that you are a product of your society. And so I think every single person, no matter your gender or how you grew up, we can also have biases ourselves. And I really appreciate the kindness that you approached this woman with in telling her to just take a breath and recognize that nobody's perfect and we're all in it together. So thank you for that. I'm gonna pass the mic over to Janet.
Sure. I would like to share a story of myself. I got benefit from a male AI sponsorship. So I was leading technology for PC Financial for around 10 years. And we all know that PC Financial has 3 million credit card customers. And there was an opportunity that when Loblaw acquired Shoppers, they're looking for somebody to lead the combined PC Optimum program. So this is 30 million Canadians running on that program. Like, it's most loved Canadian loyalty program, right? So I know that post was up. Now I never thought, well, of course, in deep inside, I wanted to, but I check all the box. I probably made like 2 of the 10, right, at a time. And I wasn't confident enough even to talk to anybody about pursuing that opportunity. So at that time, a male AI approached me, and he was my boss at the time. And he goes, Jen, I think you can do the job. I'm like, I'm not sure because the consumer impact was 3 million to 30 million to 2,400 stores. And I wasn't confident that I can run that. And, you know, 10 years after, I was running that program for many, many years. So it was somebody who gave me the confidence that I can do it. So I really got benefit from that sponsorship.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really great story because oftentimes working in tech, as women, we often feel like we have to be a loud voice in the room and we have to constantly advocate for ourselves. And it's nice to see that you are working with someone who's already aware of your capabilities and where you could grow to as well and was there to champion you.
I'll probably share a story about a time that I was also the beneficiary of some sponsorship. In my case, I went through, if you look at my resume, I've gone through a lot of different startups, and many of them, I kept hitting, you know, that mystical glass ceiling where I always felt like I was ready for the next thing. And for so many different, what felt like made up reasons, I couldn't get through. One of the positions that I had applied for, I got rejected because my boss at the time, who actually knew me very well, so I was very disappointed to hear this from him, his response was, "You're too empathetic."
You're kidding me.
That was the reason for that promotion being denied. And so I left that place, moved on to the next place, tried to apply for another management opportunity there. And at the time, I had been exploring going back to school to do a part-time MBA. And I was honest about it with my boss because I thought they would support that. And I wanted them to write my recommendation letter. So I intended to do that part-time, and I was like, so, you know, can I do that part-time and also get this job that I'm already doing? They're like, no, you're not focusing enough. You know, I can't trust that you will give this job your full attention. So left that place. and then, yeah, I joined Purpose Med, and from, like, day one, my boss there was extremely supportive. Like, he took over the recommendation letter writing process. He, like, wrote me glowing reviews for this MBA program, helped me get in, sponsored me on that regard, and which meant a lot to me after the experience I had just had. But I came into a scrappy startup with no management experience, and I went from not, like, being a first-time manager and now having product design, engineering and client experience teams reporting to me. That's a 40 person department.
Yeah. That deserves a round of applause.
Ambitious as I was about pushing myself, there have been many, many moments of self-doubt. So just having my boss really champion me in those dark moments where I'm like, I don't think I could do this. I know I signed up for this, but, like, talk track that goes through your mind where you try to talk yourself out of the thing that you thought you wanted. He kept me going.
That's amazing. I love that story because one thing that I really took away from it is your ability to champion for yourself as well. Knowing and recognizing when you're in a situation where you're not getting the support that you need and being able to confidently walk away from that and knowing that if you plant your seeds somewhere else, they will grow. And it seems like it's paid off. I'm sure there's people that are listening to this podcast right now or in this event with us currently that might be experiencing some hardships and difficulty at their work. And I know the economy isn't maybe in the greatest place, but there's always an opportunity if you believe in yourself and have the confidence to find the right environment and the right leadership that will support you. So that was a beautiful story. Thank you. And now, Matthew.
You know, I always think I like to measure myself on outcomes. So I think, you know, allyship or sponsorship or being a champion for someone's not a box to be ticked. You know, showing up is just sort of step one. So, you know, I've spent a lot of time figuring out what are the outcomes that, you know, the person on the other side of the table wants. And I'm a competitive person too. So, you know, I if they've got a goal, then, you know, I try and inherit that goal for myself too. And I had a direct report manager a few years ago had said, you know, if this job opens up, I'll consider it, I'll apply, I'll go all in. And, you know, the job market was pretty slow at the time internally on the particular role they wanted. And then, you know, magically, role opened up that was close, not exactly what she sort of had in mind, but it was like 90% of the way there. And so, you know, I was really excited because I subscribed to job alerts for other people. So I can sort of go through my network and see, you know, if the right job opens up and you told me, you know, X months ago you wanted to apply, you're going to apply. And, you know, she's like, well, you know, I don't have all the skills. It's not perfect. I'm sort of happy. And she was very, very quickly sort of talking herself out of applying. And so I think those are sort of the moments where I think you can make a big difference just in terms of being that person to rally the troops, you know, get fired up and get the other person fired up that they got this. And that's part of it. It's also what happens when, you know, you're not with that person and you're in closed rooms and there's a moment to sort of speak up, champion, and just really highlight, I think, what's happening that you might be able to support in that case. And, you know, obviously positive ending to this story. She got the job. She's happy.
Amazing.
In that job now. And I think that's one of the things that I always try and leave with folks is that it's not a box to be ticked. It's, you know, you got to make sure that you're there to support long after, whether it's a formal mentorship program or otherwise. You're sort of there for that person and you're in their corner, regardless of what they might be looking to do.
That's wonderful because we know even from the data, you can Google it online, but women are more hesitant to apply for roles if they don't check all the boxes and that they don't, every single thing that's on the job description is not something they can say, oh, I can excel at 110%. And so sometimes you need that support person or someone in your network who will push you and say, you've got it, you're there, or you're almost there, and it's time for you to take that leap and do the thing. And so actually, the way that you described your mentorship style, I really appreciate that, because it's kind of just who you are at your core. You're competitive, you want to help people, you want to see people do well, and then that just comes across in the workspace. And so my question for the group in total is, what is the role of a champion or sponsor? If we were to define what that looks like, how do we determine what championing for women looks like? Is it more mentorship? Is it coaching? Is it advising? Where does it sit?
To me, a sponsor or champion for women is to, you know, find a seat, not just like coaching, ongoing coaching, but actually take some actions to find a seat for women, but more seats for women. That's the biggest difference.
I think it's about also being the voice in the room in my absence. So if I'm not in the room, who's speaking up for me? Who's actually saying the things that need to be said? Who's actually cares enough to put themselves out on my behalf? And I see that as really what the champion is. Mentoring is a factor, but I don't think it's actually the full story, because I need that voice in the room when I'm not in it yet.
I agree that I think they're different. You know, mentor is there to coach, provide advice. That's where the champion for me, it's sort of a long-term commitment. You know, when you've gone through mentorship with someone and you've had sort of that positive relationship, the hope is that sort of the sponsorship or the being the champion for that person continues. One of the things I've also learned is that not all sort of mentorship relationships work out. Like many relationships, you need to sort of click with the person on the other side of the table. So I would also say, you know, don't get discouraged. If you have a mentor and it just feels like things aren't working, find another one, right? I think it's important to sort of work with someone who can, and that's where mentorship is useful, but coach in ways that resonate with you and that work with you. And if, you know, long-term, that person can evolve into a champion or a sponsor.
If you're not taking the time to speak to different people, have coffee chats, virtual chats, whatever it is, it's hard to find a champion if you're just sort of isolating yourself and just doing your work. So part of it, I think, is also championing yourself and getting your name out there. And even if you may not feel like you're ready for the challenge, put yourself out there, build those relationships, get those mentors, and get people to champion you. So I'm very much a numbers person. I like to track things. I like to know the metrics. And when we're talking about championing women, what are specific key performance indicators we should assess companies on if they're looking at their progress? And, you know, we know there's a lot of like women's groups and women's associations within companies. How do we ensure that we're hitting the right KPIs? How can we even measure the success of championing women?
One of them would be, are you above market availability? In a particular field, like right now, market availability of women in tech is somewhere around 20%, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I think an organization that is really invested in growth in women and technology is above that market availability number. They're really out there trying to do the hard work. So a good sign of them actually being successful is being above that.
I think the big one that comes to mind is around salary equity in a company. You know, I've been in organizations where I was able to have male allies who would tell me how much they were making, and it was very different from my paycheck for, you know, the same or similar jobs. And having that kind of allyship is important. But if companies aren't measuring that as a KPI and just kind of comparing how different those salaries are, I think that's an important indicator that something's off.
What I want to share is for some public companies, there are metrics, but those metrics are very high level. So they measure, we measure like at board level, what is the gender percentage, at your management level, what is the gender percentage. But once you get into the organization, once you get into different levels, especially in large corporations, different levels of as women progress, the percentage drops, like those nitty-gritty details are not being paid attention. As a result, we lose women as they grow into the leadership level. As we speak into numbers, I would like to share some like hot off press numbers as I heard today. From a startup perspective, women found the startup are getting 2 to 5% of the global venture fund capital. That is a very sad status, 2 to 5% of the global fund. Top 500 global companies, there are only 5% female CEOs. And if we get into the color of women of CEOs, it's less than 1%. And I learned from the status from 2023, there are, in Canada, there are more CEOs whose name Michael than female CEOs. Just those are very hard numbers for all of us to remind every day that it is very important to, for us to continue to push the needle. It is hard, but we need to continue.
When you actually hear about the percentage of female-founded companies that are getting venture capital or the amount of women in leadership positions, you can't fight against or argue against those numbers. If you're in a boardroom and you're trying to champion women, bringing up these numbers and saying, hey, did you know that like we're all making the decisions and writing checks for startups, but less than 2% of women are getting checks in Canada, something is missing there. And I think from a foundational perspective, it's something that I talk a lot about with my friends. And one thing that we discuss is there's so many societal issues that are creating this gender inequality. And so I hope that in our lifetime, we start to see a major shift, but some of the data shows that it may not happen for, you know, years after, long after we're gone. And so we need to think about what can we do today to support and champion change and diversity. And money is power. And at the end of the day, if we're hearing that women are not reaching these successful positions as CEOs and leaders of companies, unless we all start calling ourselves Michael, maybe that could be, that might be something we do. It has a trickle down effect. Championing women in tech encompasses various aspects such as hiring practices. We talk about salary equity, parental leave policies, and also just promoting women in leadership roles. So the challenge is, There's a significant gap, right? When we look at prevalent gender bias, and there's this tech bro culture. And we were kind of joking about it before we got on the panel. As the sole male panelist and someone on the inside, I'd like to ask you this question specifically. How do we dismantle bro culture? And how do we get more men to be aware of these biases or just get them to pay attention more? Because someone like yourself, it's kind of like, you're just in it and you're ready to help, but how do we get more men? Because a lot of the burden falls on women to try to educate and get men to understand that, like, give us a chance and let us be partners and we need a seat at the table. So that's a really long and loaded question, but I'm so curious about your thoughts.
How do we get tech bros on the endangered species list? Is there some?
Kind of.
Okay. Good question. It's a good question.
I like the way you summarize what I'm saying.
You know, I like it. And I think, you know, I'm sure the majority of people work in tech. We think a lot about systems. I think before you think about systems, you have to sort of think about self. And so I think for me, and probably for many males, I wouldn't say I'm, you know, I don't come across tech bros very often in my day to day, thankfully. But I would imagine that sort of time spent with self is maybe not where it should be. And what I mean by self is just making sure that you're educating yourself. It's sort of hard, you know, it's hard to read the label when you're inside the bottle, is sort of the old adage you mentioned before. You know, we all of us have bias, but are we conscious of what might be our conscious, but also unconscious bias as well? And so the more that you can put yourself in positions where you might be you know, the only, one of the few males in the room, or you might learn something new about yourself that you otherwise might not have. I think it's really, really important to just spend time listening. And I don't think listening is a skill that's high on the sort of tech bro priority list, perhaps.
I agree.
And so, you know, just listening and sort of seeing the world through the eyes of others, I think is really, really important. And where that sort of helps and where that connects back to systems is, especially when we think about sort of gender equity at work, it's, you know, what could I do myself, whether that's sort of helping someone around me, whether it's a loved one or, you know, a teammate or a colleague. And that's a good starting point, but then how do you build that into something bigger that might be, what, you know, what might I do for my team or what might I do in my department? And, you know, where I think we need to drive more change is, like, how do we create systems that change outcomes over the long term, which is a lot harder to do. But I think one of the things that if we were spending more time sort of on the self, we would have more time to think about how to put systems in place to change that.
Self-reflection is a really big component, I think. I'm glad that you mentioned that a few times as you were answering the question, because not many people take the time to reflect on themselves and how they show up and how they show for others, especially when we live in a society that's a capitalist society and everyone's trying to get ahead and do their best. And like, they look at everyone around them as competition instead of looking at them as a community and people that they can work with and that we can all win together versus I win and the person next to me doesn't. So that's a couple of my thoughts on this, but I want to pass it on to the rest of the panelists.
As someone who has worked with a lot of tech bros, I can tell you how I've been able to successfully navigate this conversation with the most diehard of them. And I think the key is to just come in with positive intent into that conversation. If you're going to try to talk to the founder of your company about something that they're going to feel very insecure about, it's like, cancel culture out there is a very frightening place for a lot of cis white males right now. So I think there's some kind of way to approach the subject without letting those walls to go up immediately, right? Like, as soon as you come in going like, oh, this is a problem, that you've fucked all this up, they're just going to shut down emotionally and not listen. So I've found... in the conversations that I've had over the years with a lot of different founders who've struggled with this and the startups that I've been at, I've always just gone in going like, hey, you know, we've grown really fast in a really short period of time, which is awesome. Like, we have all these great folks now. You know, I know, like, the pressure was on, it filled these gaps really quickly. But, you know, there were a few steps that might have been missed. And it's nobody's fault, you know. Hyperscale startup, that's very normal. Things are broken. There's no process. It's very natural. Like, not saying anyone's to blame. But how about we talk about, like, introducing some of these fair hiring practices and, like, actually come to the table with some data about what the hiring pipeline looks like and how few candidates might be applying from different backgrounds, or the ones who are making it through. And just keep the conversation as objective as possible without the blame, because the moment blame comes in,
people get defensive.
Yeah.
And also, like, a compliment sandwich where you're like, you guys are doing great, you're wonderful, pat on the back, here's an issue, also still doing great. Let's keep going. Joanne?
I'll add a little bit, kind of keying off my last commentary about voice in the room, because the thing I would look for male allies to be doing is holding each other accountable in the absence of women in the room. So things get said, basically pulling up, saying, you know, taking the brave stand to sort of say, like, hey, this is wrong, and holding other men accountable for that activity. I think that's super important.
I love that accountability piece, because there's a lot that happens, as much as you want to champion someone behind closed doors, there's a lot of negative talk that happens in leadership meetings behind closed doors. And so being that person that's the voice of reason and sort of a champion, not just for one person, but for a total group of people, I think is really important. Thank you for calling that out. For anyone who's working in an organization that doesn't have a women's chapter or an ERG group or something like that, at what point do you recommend that they have these conversations with HR? Is it something that should be mandated from their early onset when they're creating their mission and the vision for the organization? What's, you know, Where does that sit? And what is the role of HR in these type of associations?
Yeah, I would like to share experience because Loblaw was like, it is the largest company with 200,000 colleagues, right? I joined EQ. EQ is a mid-sized company, around 2,000 people. And the approach for ERG groups for medium size versus large size and even small size are different, right? At EQ, I saw a different approach. We empower the colleagues. It's a bottom-up approach for all ERG groups. We empower the colleague to decide what is diversity inclusion topic they wanted to embrace. The team from bottom up, they can decide what are the themes. And then we offer them almost like a pitch to the management board on, okay, what do they want to do for that pillar? And they also get opportunity to meet the management board or even like our board to, you know, do something outside of their day-to-day work. And it also helps the employee to match their personal value with the company value. It is outside of their day-to-day job. They feel they are empowered to contribute back to the society. So there's many benefits from a bottom-up approach versus a top-down. And if you are in a startup, like I'm going to talk about third scenario. If you're in a startup, a small business that you don't have the resource, the budget to run those ERG groups, then there's always nonprofit organizations. So I'm on the board for ICTC, Information Communication Council of Canada. And those are nonprofit organizations that's founded by government. They build programs and they can offer their purpose. Their goal is to offer the help to medium and small business that doesn't have the resources to focus on diversity, to focus on women in technology. So we can piggyback on those programs that's founded by those nonprofit organizations. So whether you are large, medium, small, there's always resources that we can leverage. And I don't know if I answered your question to HR. I think it depends. Like if it's top down, I think the company is the diversity is created by the HR. Like there is centralized HR function for diversity. I'm sure Google has, Loblaw has. But in median company, it depends, right? It might not be initiated by HR, but I think the important is, you know, if it's employee-led, initiated bottom-up, it is also has its advantage. However, if you want to define metrics and make your leadership accountable, you need some leadership support, whether if it's HR or it's the top of your management. Like you need, if you want to really make the number, the leadership need to be accountable, make the change on the numbers. Hope that helps.
No, that was great. That was a great way to end it off because making sure there's that accountability at the leadership level is really helpful because then if leadership prioritizes these things and they have an eye on it, the teams will work on it. It's kind of like I used to work at a tech company and leadership would just mention one thing, right? Like the smallest thing and everyone would be like, oh my God, we have to do it because so-and-so said this is important to them. And so I think it's really helpful when it comes from leadership and people want to excel and they want to do well, it'll help the teams to focus on the right areas. So Joanne, I know you also have a lot of experience working in women's ERG groups and are a great champion within the tech space. Is there anything that you want to add based on your experience being part of these groups, whether it is at a later stage, how to ensure that KPIs are being integrated into these groups or connecting with leadership?
Sure. I mean, the first thing I would say is even in a really large company, it doesn't have to come top down. I was at Capital One for 8 years, about 60,000 people, and the Women in Tech ERG at Capital One was started by a senior associate, somebody about 3 years out of school. And she basically had an idea and pitched it and kept pushing on it and kept going. And eventually the Women in Tech ERG was created. And that's about 4,000 people. So a pretty big group and has a huge impact. They now have like an annual event called the Women in Tech Experience and 3,000 women software engineers and product managers and that are involved in that. That's a pretty impressive thing. And she was a junior member of the organization that actually pushed that. So don't feel held back, you know, go for it if you really think there's an opportunity.
Amina was sharing with me that she has a specific approach to mentorship, and she has three guiding principles that have shaped how she supports the careers of many women, actually. Can you share some of these principles with the group? Because I think they're really important, and I love the way that you position them.
The number one principle for me that I try to teach other folks now that I'm kind of in this position of privilege where I can share my experiences, resilience is one of the most important pieces of your growth. I think a lot of folks think that getting a mentor is somehow going to be some kind of silver bullet to you growing. It's not. When you're signing up for mentorship, you're signing up to be vulnerable with someone who's going to be telling you, hopefully, things that will challenge you to grow. And you need a little bit of a thick skin to hear that feedback. And even more thick skin to like grow from that. And that's like, I think the number one principle there. And it's tied to principle number two, which is the growth mindset. As much as I love to talk about people I was successfully able to help, I have also tried to mentor folks where things didn't work out. I think back to a lot of the folks that I tried to help and I couldn't. And my reflection on that as a mentor is that some folks were just stuck in that fixed mindset. And they thought that, you know, finding a mentor that could just hear them complain was going to somehow make things better. They wouldn't take accountability for their growth.
That's a big part of it.
Yes, that is principle number three, is my job as a mentor is to hold you accountable to the growth that you're saying you want to show. This is a two-way street. And if folks aren't ready for that level of being challenged, it can be really hard. And I'm sure a lot of you already know the book Radical Candor by Kim Scott. She talks a lot about being able to care about someone personally, but challenging them directly. And that's that place of radical candor where a lot of growth happens. And that's what a mentor-mentee relationship should be all about. But I think oftentimes folks get trapped in that ruinous empathy quadrant because they're like, oh, let's be friends. And I'm sadly not friends with a lot of my mentors, but they don't know that. But they've had profound impact on my career. But yeah, so the three principles, coming back to it, is the resiliency to have that radically candid conversation. Number two is just having that growth mindset and like being comfortable with the discomfort. And number three, just being accountable to your own growth.
Joanne, did you want to add anything to that? I know you love radical candor as well.
I had the most success with mentors who made me uncomfortable, who really kind of pushed me out of my comfort zone. That was really important. If I was comfortable, I probably wasn't growing. And so I recognized that. It took a while to recognize that, actually, to be honest with you, because I like being comfortable. But, you know, when you get pushed, that's when you actually have things happen for you. And I think that's really important.
When Joanne talked about the most successful mentor that makes you uncomfortable, I thought about my mom.
Do you want to tell us more? That's all you're gonna get. Sorry, guys. How do you approach championing someone who is maybe ethnically different from you? Their gender is different from you. They come from a different background completely. How do you make sure to approach it in a way where, as you're mentoring and coaching them, you're also understanding where they're coming from?
Has anyone read Culture Map? It's a good book. Just look it up, because I think that's really, really helpful, at least on sort of getting back to like just self-learning. I think vulnerability was mentioned too. I think being vulnerable with your mentor, but I often find that goes the other way. I had a really, really great mentor. She was a woman doing a job similar to mine in Brazil. And I was sort of like paired with her when I entered this role. And I thought I would go into it and like complain to her about like my problems and things that were sort of going wrong and get her advice, like sage Yoda advice on things. And she started being very vulnerable, talking about how, English is her second language. She has a bit of imposter syndrome working at Google, but her superpowers are XYZ. And I find that sort of disarmament was really helpful in sort of having myself open up on, well, like, here's all the things that I'm really worried or scared about in this job that I would never openly show my teams or sort of openly talk to my own manager about. So I think that's really, really important in that mentor-mentee relationship, is that that sort of works both ways. And also just, you know, getting to know what's going on outside of work, I think really, really matters too. And just understanding what someone's whole self, and making sure that you can show up for them in ways that support them in, you know, whatever their ambitions might be. But that differs, right, based on our own sort of lived experiences, and gender, race, culture is a big part of that too.
My advice is, you find a mentor that's coming from a different background. They really pushed me hard, and I agree with you. I had a lot of the aha moment because of those strong different opinions. I was matched with a global CEO executive from WXN. This was maybe 15 years ago. So I first meeting, she's very busy. I got to talk to her for 5 minutes in a year. So I tried to book like 3 times, and she keep rescheduling. When I got on the call, she said to me, tell me who you work for, what is org structure, what are you struggling with? I told a story of when I got another, I was loyal to my employer for long, like many, many years, and I got another opportunity from a competitor, and I was being very loyal, and I told her the difference in terms of the responsibility and the compensation, and she goes, "Are you idiot?" Would slap me on my face, like virtually. From the phone. That time there's no video.
Sounds like my mentors.
Yeah, wow. I was speechless at the time. But she was one who woke me up that I need to find my value, and if I don't fight for myself, nobody else will. That was a moment that I will always remember. The second story I would like to share is my coach. We're getting to this virtual war of, Janet, you need to open up yourself. I'm like, no, I'm not. Right? I'm in my culture and my background, I came to work. The Janet is the Janet at work, and vice is the Janet at home. I have two different profile in my head, and she really, really pushed me to open myself up to be the authentic one Janet. Like, there's one Janet. Don't hide yourself. So I also benefit, I benefit afterwards, but that time was very, very hard. You know, between me and her, it was hard message for me to push back, and also for her to continue to give me the challenge. Okay, you need to open up. You need to show me the authentic Janet. Don't hide. So, but I think, look back, those are the most valuable advices or values I got from mentorship.
I think the story that Janet, you were just sharing, just showed your mentor trying to get you to be vulnerable, which, again, goes back to that point I was making earlier. I think, you know, if you're entering into a new relationship, whether it's with a mentor or a mentee, just open the doors for that. Like, from your first conversation, then just have an honest conversation about what your values are, how you want the relationship to go, where the boundaries of what you can and can't say are, and try to find an understanding of how the dynamic will work, and what your communication style will be. And I think, you know, it's hard. Everyone's going to have a different style that they want, but hopefully just saying that the mentorship isn't going to work unless there is that trust will help them share, you know, the context that they're coming from and the biases they've been experiencing.
I think a key factor in good mentoring is about listening and asking questions more about, not just about the space of work, but also the space that the person exists in the larger society. Being able to sort of say, hey, what's on your mind more than just the office, right? Asking the questions about what's happening for people and just listening to what they have to say. I don't know if anyone's ever seen, there's a video on YouTube called It's Not About the Nail.
Yeah.
It's a great video. Look it up if you've never seen it. But basically, mentoring isn't always about problem solving, right? It's really just about listening and asking questions and allowing people to really share their thoughts with you. And this is, I think, a super important thing, especially when you're dealing with people with different cultural backgrounds and different experiences. And most of the people I've mentored in my career have a different cultural background than me. And so I need to listen because I don't have that experience. So the only way I can help them is to listen and just ask probing questions. And hopefully they come to their own answers in the moment of doing that.
Just around the KPI thing, I think I always leave people when I'm the mentor with experiments, like extremely uncomfortable ones. And those are helpful because the next time you meet, the mentee knows we're going to talk about like how the experiment went. So I always find that's really helpful. And, that gets at sort of that progress needing tension sort of point and making sure that you're being pushed, but also pushing yourself into sort of the discomfort territory.
Thank you so much to the panelists that are here today. You all were amazing. We had such a great conversation. And thanks, as always, to our loyal listeners at She's Interesting. Thank you all for joining us at Toast International Women's Day's event, Championing People in Technology. Everyone, remember to tune in to She's Interesting. Subscribe to the podcast. Make sure you tune in. Join our newsletter. All of that lovely stuff. Thank you again. Thank you, April and Marissa.
And thank you to King Street Media for being a sponsor of She's Interesting and providing us with AV support so that we could record this live event and bring it to the She's Interesting community. As always, remember to rate, review, and subscribe to the She's Interesting podcast.